We are continuing Chapter 11 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. And the Sorting Hat has just sung, and everyone is now listening to Professor McGonagall reading. You ready? Abercrombie.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Ian.
This really is like Notre Dame.
Because there's an Abercrombie? Are there a lot of Abercrombies in Notre Dame?
There were some.
Really?
But you know that they're from the Abercrombie and Fitch family.
Seriously?
For real.
So they're super rich?
Yeah.
Ugh, I hate rich people.
That's why they're in. Are you kidding? That's how they got in.
Oh, yeah.
Most likely. There were a lot of people who were there who are, who like deserve to be there, but like, their last name was one of the Halls or whatever.
Oh,
and
yeah,
like, oh, so if you just like donate several million dollars,
yeah, right,
then anybody you want will get into the school.
Yep.
I don't see how it works.
Yep.
A I think legacy. It would suck to be that person, though.
Yeah, right. But, you know, you've got, like, your family's like, well, you're going to Notre Dame from, like, day one, you
right,
know?
Exactly.
It's like, yeah, you don't have a choice in the matter.
That, and then everybody is, like, gives you a hard time.
Exactly, yeah. I'd run away from home at the age of 12.
You would not.
Join a circus.
Did you ever try to run away from home?
No.
I did.
I know. You said you got the little backpack.
No,
the
not
sandwich.
The backpack.
What?
I got
the teddy bear?
No, yeah, I got to. No, that was the problem. Is that every time I tried to run away from home, my suitcase was like 90% stuffed animal.
You know what you need.
Exactly. I was like, well, I can't. It was always like a very tearful parting when I had to leave some of them behind. I was
uh-huh.
like, I still love you, Fluffy the bunny, who I never see, and I always kick off the bed first thing. You know what I mean? Like, I was just.
Where is Fluffy the Bunny?
Oh my god, Jesse, I have so many stuffed animals that my mom gave away. My mom used to go into my room when I was at school and take them away from me, like, and just, like, to see if I noticed, because I had so many. I love
stuffed animals.
That's
funny. Yeah, I know. Oh, you think I know?
You think I'm winning?
No, I've replaced all of your stuffed animals that your mom gave away.
I have a menagerie again.
I know. You have all the little tigers and little.
We're moving back into the second bedroom this weekend, by the way.
Yeah!
I know.
How are we getting the thing up, though?
I think that I'm just going to... I'm going to try a couple experiments. I've been working on a couple things.
I mean, I've noticed that the bed seems to be just as covered as it has been.
Holy
weed. Is that going to change?
Abercrombie.
Ian. The terrified-looking boy Harry had noticed earlier stumbled forward and put the hat on his head. Why would, like, what are the odds that the one guy, the one first year that he notices, is also the very first person to be read?
Well, that happens sometimes, weird things like that.
Yeah, weird things like that happen also when you have a problem
just
being creative.
Just read.
Yes. And put the hat on his head. It was only prevented from falling right down to his shoulders by his very prominent ears.
Yeah.
The hat considered for a moment, and then the rift near the brim opened again and shouted,
Gryffindor!
Harry clapped loudly with the rest of Gryffindor House as Ian Abercrombie staggered to their table and sat down, looking as though he would very much like to sink through the floor and never be looked at again. Slowly, the long line of first years thinned. In the pauses between the names and the Sorting Hat's decisions, Harry could hear Ron's stomach rumbling loudly. Finally, Zeller Rose was sorted into Hufflepuff, and Professor McGonagall picked up the hat and stool, marched them away as Professor Dumbledore rose to his feet. Harry was somewhat soothed to see Professor Dumbledore standing before them all, whatever his recent bitter feelings toward the headmaster. Between the absence of Hagrid and the presence of those dragonish horses, he'd felt that his return to Hogwarts, so long anticipated, was full of unexpected surprises like jarring notes in a familiar song. But this, at least, was how it was supposed to be, their headmaster rising to greet them all before the start of term feast. "To our newcomers," said Dumbledore in a ringing voice, his arms stretched wide and a beaming smile on his lips. "Welcome to our old hands, welcome back. There is a time for speech-making, but this is not it. Tuck in." There was an appreciative laugh and an outbreak of an applause as Dumbledore sat down neatly and threw his long beard over his shoulder so as to keep it out of the way of his plate. For food had appeared out of nowhere, so that five long tables were groaning under joints and pies and dishes of vegetables, breads, sauces, and flagons of pumpkin juice. Why the hell do they drink pumpkin juice? I love pumpkin pie, but I would not drink pumpkin juice if my life... Well, I guess if my life depended on it, I would. But, like, seriously. Seriously, pumpkin juice?
It sounds good.
It's gotta be gross as hell.
In real life, it's gross, but in Wizard Land,
oh. It doesn't make any sense. Things are only gross, or
just
not gross,
really
the same.
It's delicious. I tasted it. I went to Hogwarts.
Excellent, said Ron, with a kind of groan of longing, and he seized the nearest plate of chops and began piling them on
his
plate.
I imagine that as excellent.
Oh. Yeah, I think you're right. And began piling them on his plate, watched wistfully by nearly headless Nick. So, two things. First of all, she loves referring to people piling things on their plate. She uses that verb every single time they eat. It's either piling or heaping. She uses one of those two things every time there's any sort of food.
I like it. Makes me hungry.
It's dumb. There are other things you can do, like put. Not every time. It doesn't happen that every time people eat,
she says
they just
pile things on the plate. I picture mashed potatoes.
Yeah, right. But she's putting chops. What chops? Is that like pork chops or something?
Yeah, it's any kind of chops. Any kind of meat.
What is a chop?
It's always like the shape with a bone.
Oh, I see. Anyways, that's number one. Number two is, isn't it like super cruel of her to create these ghosts in this world? Who are, like, so wishing they could eat. He's probably been around for, like, thousands of years, and every...
Hundreds.
Okay, hundreds of years. Which means every day, for hundreds of years, he has to sit there and watch people eat. And...
But he's not hungry.
Why is he watching wistfully, then?
Because he misses senses, the sensual experience.
For hundreds of years, he's been sitting there still missing senses? He's got to lead an awful life. He's got to either get over... All right. What were you saying before the sorting? Hermione asked the ghost about the hat giving warnings. Oh, yes, said Nick, who seemed to be glad of a reason to turn away from Ron, who was now eating roast potatoes with almost indecent enthusiasm. So, aren't other people eating? What's the deal with this? Why is he... Anyways. Yes, I have heard the hat give several warnings before, always at times when it detects periods of great danger for the school. And always, of course, its advice is the same. Stand together, be strong from within.
Yes.
I'm trying to figure out what the next few words are. Au kunit nof scusen danger ifsit, said Ron.
You're supposed to say it, like, as if your mouth were full.
But I didn't know what words he was supposed to be trying to say. Oh, here, it says it next. Okay. Looking most is in danger of his hat, said Ron. His mouth was so full, Harry thought it was quite an achievement for him to make any noise at all. That's not an achievement, because you can make noise when your mouth is completely closed.
Just read. Too much commentary.
This is a very commentary-full part chapter
yeah,
for the chapter.
Sure is.
I beg your pardon, said nearly headless Nick politely, while Hermione looked revolted. Ron gave an enormous swallow. Hermione likes swallowing, by the way. And
oh,
said,
Jesse!
All right, fine. We're done. I crossed the line. I'm stopping commentary. And said, how can it know if the school's in danger, if it's a hat? I have no idea, said nearly headless Nick. Of course, it lives in Dumbledore's office, so I dare say it picks up things there. And it wants all the houses to be friends, said Harry, looking over at the Slytherin table where Draco Malfoy was holding court. Fat chance. Well, now, you shouldn't take that attitude, said Nick reprovingly. Peaceful cooperation, that's the key. We ghosts, though we belong to separate houses, maintain links of friendship. In spite of the competitiveness between Gryffindor and Slytherin, I would never dream of seeking an argument with a Bloody Baron. Only because you're terrified of him, said Ron. Nearly headless Nick looked highly affronted. Terrified? I hope I, Sir Nicholas de Mimsey Poppington, I've never been guilty of cowardice in my life, the noble blood that runs in my veins. What blood, said Ron, sure you haven't still got. It's a figure of speech, said nearly headless Nick, who was now so annoyed his head was trembling ominously on his partially severed neck. I assume I'm still allowed to enjoy the use of whichever words I like, even if the pleasures of eating and drinking are denied me. But I'm quite used to students poking fun of my death, I assure you. Nick, he really wasn't laughing at you, said Hermione, throwing a furious look at Ron. Unfortunately, Ron's mouth was so packed to the exploding point again that all he could manage was Nod Idem Interpshishu, which Nick did not seem to think constituted an inadequate apology. Rising in the air, he straightened his feathered hat and swept away from them to the other end of the table, coming to rest between the Creevy brothers, Colin and Dennis. "Well done, Ron," snapped Hermione. "What?" said Ron indignantly, finally having managed to swallow his food. "I'm not allowed to ask a simple question." "Oh, forget it," said Hermione irritably, and the pair of them spent the rest of the meal in huffy silence. Harry was too used to their bickering to bother trying to reconcile them. He felt it was a better use of his time to eat his way steadily through his steak and kidney pie, and then a large plateful of his favorite treacle tart. None of these foods sound appetizing at all, I have to say. Kidney?
Too much caffeine.
Oh, sorry. When all the students had finished eating, and the noise level in the hall was starting to creep up again, Dumbledore got to his feet once more. Talking ceased immediately as all turned to face the headmaster. Harry was feeling pleasantly drowsy now. His four-poster bed was waiting somewhere above, wonderfully warm and soft. "Well, now that we are all digesting another magnificent feast, I beg a few moments of your attention for the usual start-of-term notices," said Dumbledore. "First years ought to know that the forest in the grounds is out of bounds to students, and a few of our older students ought to know by now." Harry, Ron, and Hermione exchanged smirks. "Mr. Filch, caretaker, has asked me, for what he tells me is the 460th time, to remind you all that magic is not permitted in corridors between classes, nor are a number of other things, all of which can be checked on the extensive list now fastened to Mr. Filch's office door. We've had two changes in staffing this year. We are very pleased to welcome back Professor Grubby Plank, who will be taking care of magical creatures lesson. We are also delighted to introduce Professor Umbridge, our new Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher." There was a round of polite but fairly unenthusiastic applause, during which Harry, Ron, and Hermione exchanged slightly panicked looks. Dumbledore had not said for how long Grubby Plank would be teaching. Dumbledore continued. "Tryouts for House Quidditch teams will take place on the..." He broke off, looking inquiringly at Professor Umbridge. As she was not much taller than standing than sitting, there was a moment when nobody understood why Dumbledore had stopped talking. But then Professor Umbridge said, "Hmm, hmm," and it became clear she had got to her feet and was intending to make a speech. Dumbledore only looked taken aback for a moment, and then he sat back down smartly and looked alertly at Professor Umbridge, as though he desired nothing better than to listen to her talk. Other members of the staff were not as adept at hiding their surprise. Professor Sprout's eyebrows had disappeared into her flyaway hair, and Professor McGonagall's mouth was as thin as Harry had ever seen it. No new teacher had ever interrupted Dumbledore before. Many of the students were smirking. This woman obviously did not know how things were done at Hogwarts. "Thank you, Headmaster," Professor Umbridge simpered, "for those kind words of welcome." Her voice was high-pitched, breathy, and a little girlish, and again Harry felt a powerful rush of dislike that he could not explain to himself. All he knew was that he loathed everything about her, from her stupid voice to her fluffy pink cardigan. She gave another little throat-clearing cough. And continued, "Well, it is lovely to be back at Hogwarts, I must say," she smiled, revealing a very pointed teeth, "and to see such little happy faces looking back at me." Harry glanced around. None of the faces he could see looked happy. On the contrary, they all looked rather taken aback at being addressed as though they were 5 years old. "I'm very much looking forward to getting to know you all. I'm sure we will be very good friends." Students exchanged looks at this. Some of them were barely concealing grins. I'll be your friend as long as I don't have to borrow that cardigan, Parvati whispered to Lavender, and both of them lapsed into silent giggles. Professor Umbridge cleared her throat again. When she continued, some of the breathiness had vanished from her voice. She sounded much more businesslike, and now her words had a dull, learned-by-heart sound to them.
The Ministry of Magic is always considered the education of young witches and wizards to be of vital importance. The rare gifts with which you were born may come to nothing if not nurtured by careful instruction. The ancient skills unique to the wizarding community must be passed down through the generations, lest we lose them forever. The treasure trove of magical knowledge amassed by our ancestors must be guarded, replenished, and polished by those who have been called by the noble profession of teaching.
Professor Umbridge paused here and made a little bow to her fellow staff members, none of whom bowed back. Professor McGonagall's dark eyebrows had contracted so that she looked positively hawk-like, and Harry distinctly saw her exchange a significant glance with Professor Sprout as Umbridge gave another little and went on with her speech.
Every headmaster and headmistress of Hogwarts has brought something new to the weighty task of governing this historic school. And that is as it should be, for without progress there will be stagnation and decay. Then again, progress for progress' sake must be discouraged, for tried and tested traditions often require no tinkering. A balance, then, between old and new, between permanence and change, between tradition and innovation.
Harry found his attentiveness ebbing, as though his brain were slipping in and out of tune. The quiet that always filled the hall when Dumbledore was speaking was breaking up, as students put their heads together, whispering and giggling. Over at the Ravenclaw table, Cho Chang was chatting animatedly with her friends. A few seats along from Cho, Luna Lovegood had got the Quibbler out again. Meanwhile, at the Hufflepuff table, Ernie McMillan was one of the few still staring at Professor Umbridge, but he was glassy-eyed and Harry was sure he was only pretending to listen in an attempt to live up to the new prefect's badge gleaming on his chest. Professor Umbridge did not seem to notice the restlessness of her audience. Harry had the impression that a full-scale riot could have broken out under her nose and she would have plowed on with her speech. The teachers, however, were still listening very attentively, and Hermione seemed to be drinking in every word Umbridge spoke, though, judging by her expression, they were not at all to her taste.
Because some changes will be for the better, others will come in...
I'm going to go back. My throat is getting bad. In the fullness of time, to be recognized as errors of judgment... Meanwhile, some old habits will be retained, and rightly so, whereas others, outmoded and outworn, must be abandoned. Let us move forward, then, into a new era of openness, effectiveness, and accountability, intent on preserving what ought to be preserved. Perfecting what ought to be perfected, and pruning wherever we find practices that ought to be prohibited. She sat down, and Dumbledore clapped. The staff followed his lead, though Harry noticed that several of them brought their hands together, only once or twice before stopping. A few students joined in, but most had been taken unawares by the end of the speech, not having listened to more than a few words of it, and before they could start applauding properly, Dumbledore stood up again. "Thank you, Professor Umbridge. That was most illuminating," he said, bowing to her. "Now, as I was saying, Quidditch tryouts will be held." "Yes, it was certainly illuminating," said Hermione in a low voice. "You're not telling me you enjoyed it," said Ron quietly, turning a glazed face upon Hermione. "That was about the dullest speech I've ever heard, and I grew up with Percy." "I said illuminating, not enjoyable," said Hermione. "It explained a lot." "Did it?" said Harry in surprise. "Sounded like a load of waffle to me." "There was some important stuff hidden in the waffle," said Hermione grimly. "What was there?" said Ron blankly. "How about progress for progress' sake must be discouraged? How about pruning wherever we find practices that ought to be prohibited?" "Well, what does it mean?" said Ron impatiently. "I'll tell you what it means," said Hermione ominously. "It means the Ministry is interfering at Hogwarts." There was a great clattering and banging all around them. Dumbledore had obviously just dismissed the school because everyone was standing up ready to leave the hall. Hermione jumped up, looking flustered. "Ron, we're supposed to show the first years where to go." Oh, yeah, said Ron, who had obviously forgotten. Hey, you lot, midgets.
Ron?
Well, they are. They're titchy.
I know, but you can't call them midgets.
First years, Hermione called commandingly along the table. This way, please. A new group of students walked shyly up the gap between Gryffindor and Hufflepuff's tables, all of them trying hard not to lead the group. They did indeed seem very small. Harry was sure he had not appeared that young when he had arrived there. He grinned at them. A blonde boy next to Ian Abercrombie looked petrified, nudged Ian, and whispered something in his ear. Ian Abercrombie looked equally frightened and stole a horrified look at Harry, who felt the grin slide off his face like stink cap. See you later, he said to Ron and Hermione, and he made his way out of the Great Hall alone, doing everything he could to ignore more whispering, staring, and pointing as he passed. He kept his eyes fixed ahead as he wove his way through the crowd in the entrance hall, then hurried up the marble staircase, took a couple of concealed shortcuts, and he had soon left most of the crowds behind. And we'll continue chapter 11 tomorrow.
Hope you like that kitten.
You're an adorable kitten, boo. I love you so much.
Say goodnight, Carrie.
Goodnight, Carrie.
Goodnight, Carrie. I love you.